On this episode of The Playbook, I have a professor of mechanical engineering at Columbia. Sounds boring, but he's actually a former NASA astronaut, Mike Massimino, who was the first person ever to tweet from outer space. We're going to learn, is there extraterrestrial life or not on other planets? Join me for all of this and more on the space edition of The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer.
Can't imagine a better playbook than Mike Massimo here, the famous astronaut.
Massimino. Yeah, since you're Canadian.
My nickname, by the way, is the name Butcher. So right. Mike Massimino.
You got
sorry,
it.
I practiced right. that three times. Now we know why I didn't go to Columbia.
That's why they call me Mass. That's my nickname.
First astronaut on the playbook. And the playbook is about kind of your playbook to success. And I think one thing I've learned about the astronauts that I've met is that most tell me that when they were a child, they dreamed of being an astronaut. Is that true about you?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. I'm old enough to remember Neil Armstrong on the moon.
Very cool.
When I was 6 years old, I saw that happen. So but a lot of kids want to be astronauts when they're little.
Right? Yeah.
Especially back then, that was the coolest thing to be. That and, a professional athlete.
Right. But, I always say the three things that people wanted to be when we were kids. I'm a couple years younger than you, although you look younger, is
well, thank you.
Astronaut.
Must be the camera.
It's good, though. Astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
Athlete.
Yeah.
Or president.
Really?
Which I think...
That's a lot of work, though.
Yeah, I think now nobody wants to be president. Like very few
somebody
kids.
Somebody does.
Yeah. We won't go there. Yeah, this is the playbook.
Yeah.
Tell me how you go from dreaming, of being an astronaut, and I'm sure it wasn't a direct road to success with no rejection along the way. How step-by-step do you hold on to that dream, and did you ever kind of move off of the dream and then it just came back? For me, sports did, right? I wanted to be Jerry Maguire and ended up being Jerry Maguire, but I had this weird path to that journey. Explain your journey to us.
Well, you've kind of already somewhat described it, where it was something I had as a little kid, was very interested. That and baseball. So in 69, Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. The Mets won the World Series, so that kind of set the bit in my those are my two passions, were space and baseball.
Yeah, a good childhood growing up in New York.
It was all right. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And now we suffer as fans for our teams. But
I get it.
By the time I was about like 10 or 11, the astronaut dream just seemed a little far-fetched, for me. And I just didn't see any path to get there, and thought it was something you dreamt about as a kid, but that wasn't a reality of what my life could be.
And how'd your parents feel about that?
My parents were just pretty happy if I didn't go to jail. They set the bar pretty low. I was the third kid, much younger than my brother or sister, and they'd be like, oh man, just try to give us as little trouble as possible.
And your siblings, though, your older siblings, were they good students like you?
They were pretty good students. Yeah. My brother and my sister were good students. My parents were good parents. It was a good childhood in Long Island.
Because I find when parents, my mom, single mom, raised six kids. I told you my siblings all went to the Ivy Leagues, and they play that same, set the bar low for David, all this stuff. But I felt that there's two things that contributed to that. My mom was a terrific mom, but one was the idea that my siblings set the bar so high that I had to compete. And then I had Jewish guilt on the other side if I didn't compete correctly with that.
We need to get him a therapist.
Yeah.
You get a therapist. You should do a thing, because I think you need some help with that whole thing, with that guilt.
I got mommy issues.
You need to get that out. Yeah.
So, here you are, you kind of changed your path. What did you prepare yourself to do?
As a kid, I liked sports. I did the best I could in school. Liked math and science, and decided I wanted to be an engineer when it came time to go to college, but never thought about the astronaut. I really did kind of cross it off. I was like, that's impossible. It's not going to happen. And when I got out of college, actually it was my senior year in college, I saw a movie called The Right Stuff. That movie came out my senior year, and went to see that movie, and that kind of rekindled my interest. And I started looking into what the space program was about at that time, which was now the middle 1980s. I didn't do much about it.
Yeah.
I went and got a job working as an engineer. But after working after college for about a year, I started thinking, hey, you've only got one life. Everyone only has one life, one career. Sports wasn't going to work out for me. That was, I didn't have the ability, the skill to be a professional athlete. But I thought maybe I could do something in the space program. I didn't know if I could become an astronaut. I knew that was going to be very unlikely, but I thought at least I could do something to contribute. So I kind of changed direction after working a few years and went to grad school with the intent of trying to get involved with the space program.
Now, in the mid-80s, how many total astronauts have there been?
Oh, I don't know. It depends how you count these things.
Give me a ballpark.
Probably by the mid-80s, you had, you know, by the mid-1980s, we probably had, less than 100, maybe.
Actually gone to space?
Well, I don't know. So I'm trying to find, I don't know about all those numbers.
But less than 100, when you fly, it's actually harder be an astronaut than a professional athlete.
It is. So when you fly in space, they give you someone keeps track of this stuff, Dave. Right. I don't know who it is. But someone keeps track of that. I don't know if I was number 300 something there's been, you know, a few hundred people right now who have been to space, maybe.
Yeah, less than Hall of Famers in the NFL.
I don't know. There's about 500 or 600 now, both including the U.S. and Russia and China and countries of Europe and so on. So back then it was a smaller number, but the space shuttle program, which was active when I started thinking about this, being an astronaut working for NASA, ran for 30 years from 81 to 2011. And we got a lot of people into space because we were flying that fairly often, and you had 7 people at a time going into space. So it gave the opportunity for lots of people to go, because the number's actually gone down now, the number of astronauts. But hopefully it's going to go up again now with this privatization that's coming around the corner here.
Which is very cool.
Yeah.
Now, there's two factors. You're a scientist, a mathematician, an engineer. But that doesn't prepare you for the ego, which I call the fear factor, of going to space. Mm-hmm. And someday I want to go to space
as this privatization
occurs. I think that will happen in my lifetime, and I'm an experiential person. Mm-hmm. I'd make the investment to go into space.
Yeah, I recommend it.
But tell me about the fear side, because I think, you know, this deals with a lot of entrepreneurs and people following their dreams. And whether you're a professional athlete or an astronaut or a CEO of a big company at 32 years old, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me about how you dealt with this, you know, I might not come back on that first trip.
Yeah, that was something that is on your mind. And from the start, you know, that there's something that there's sort of, that's always out there. You know, that risk is always out there. But for me, I felt that was worth it. But I'm not a risk taker.
Yeah.
My son now, who is graduated college a year ago, he was going rock climbing. He's become a bit of a rock climber now. And so I was like, you know, be careful, man. Make sure you know. And he's like, Dad, you have no right
You're
to tell me anything.
Right
you put yourself on top of a bomb and flew it into space.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, fine. So it doesn't give me any credibility to tell people to be careful. But I am not a risk taker. But I felt flying in space was worth that risk. And I think that's really the importance. Whenever, no matter what you do, like you're saying, being a young CEO at this conference or at all these entrepreneurs, there's that risk you're taking. There's that fear you could fail. In the case of being an astronaut, you can get killed. But I think whatever that risk is, what you're doing, you need to feel that it's worth that risk. And I certainly felt that the opportunity to go into space was a lifelong dream for me. Plus, I feel that strongly about it. I think it's the most important thing that we're doing. I do. I think it's setting the you know, the stage for the future. I think that's where we're headed. And I wanted to be a part of that. And that comes with risk. But for that goal, for that benefit, I felt it was worth it.
Little trick question. I hope it's okay. Yeah, sorry.
You didn't say it was going to be.
I know. I didn't even have my notes, but it just came to me. I have to know.
Fire away.
Do you, and I don't know if we can, if they have to kill you after you tell me, but
no,
do you
see,
believe
that, this, I didn't realize
this
is
life?
Not worrying me.
No. Yeah,
the threat of you threatening me with death, because that was, I never had that with NASA. They say you might get killed, but we're not going to try to kill you.
No, they may.
But right now,
we're
it's making me a little worried.
No, I really
but there's cameras rolling, there's witnesses.
Do you believe there's life outside of there?
That's your trick question?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely I do. I do. I don't think we've been visited.
Yeah.
I don't think we have any evidence for that yet, but...
Because I've heard rumors, I've talked to other astronauts, and people have talked about, you know, whether it's, you know, people I know within the military, et cetera, mm-hmm. that they have confirmation that astronauts have seen... Have you heard... is this just all the myth?
No, stuff? This is... See, that's the thing, is that you've heard confirmation.
This is my wife. Honey, are you watching
don't
this?
Don't blame it on your wife.
She told me.
No, she didn't tell you nothing.
This is true.
I don't believe this. No, I think it's you.
I believe
I don't know of anything credible. I think that, you know, when you make a statement like, this is the color orange, right? Okay, that's, I mean, you have some proof this is orange. You can make these statements and you have proof right. for it. But if you're gonna make an extraordinary statement like, hey, there's been these spaceships flying around our planet from the planet Og or whatever, right. you know, you need a little proof here. You just can't say, oh, I heard some guy say it in a bar to some other guy who was here. No, we need some real proof. So I don't believe any of this crap. And if anybody comes up with this stuff, where's the proof? So we don't have any proof of any of that. And I don't know of any astronaut that said I've seen a flying saucer or anything like that. You see a lot of interesting things in space. You see things, our planet is very beautiful. You can see satellites orbiting our planet, and if the, you know, the lighting conditions are correct, you can see the stars and the moon and all these things that we see, but we see it differently in space because we're above the atmosphere. But as far as seeing like a UFO,
no, we need real,
we don't have any evidence of any of that. But I do believe that there is life other places. If you, my mission is with the Hubble Space Telescope, which has shown all the possibilities for
the vast
for
universe.
Life, because if you there are trillions of galaxies with billions of stars around inside of each one of those. Most of those stars have planets orbiting them, multiple planets orbiting them. So there's a lot of planets out there.
Yeah.
To think that we're the only ones that have life on them, we're the only planet with life on it, is probably unlikely. But these things are really far away.
Right, really.
We've checked
far.
Out our neighborhood pretty well. You know, there's nothing going on
which
in our
like
neighborhood.
Which is like this much of the universe.
It's nothing compared to the whole. So I think that there is somewhere out there, there probably, that almost has to be mathematically, someplace else where there is life. And I think eventually we'll find each other.
I hope so.
Yeah.
You wrote a book.
I did.
Talking about the secrets of the universe.
Unlocking the secrets.
Unlocking the secrets.
Yeah.
Can you unlock one of them for us?
The book, unlocking the way that title came from, to explain that. So the book is Spaceman and Astronaut's Unlikely Journey to Unlock the Secrets of the Universe. That was more or less describing the Hubble.
Yeah.
So the Hubble, Hubble Space Telescope can do amazing things, right? It's done things. When it first was launched back in 1990, it didn't see quite as well as they would like. And if you remember the story was, what happened was, is that there was a miscalculation in some of the equipment they used to grind the lens of the telescope, the mirror of the telescope. So it was ground incorrectly. It had an aberration in it. It was less than the width of a human hair. Anyway, what happened was when Hubble first launched, it didn't see very clearly. The first servicing mission that they sent up there with the shuttle to fix it fixed that problem, and they now can see very clearly. And I was on the last of the, there was five servicing missions, I was on the last two of those. Anyway, the way that Secrets of the Universe came about was, I started noticing, because I went to the telescope as a repairman, and my job was to fix it.
High-paid repairman, perfect.
I wasn't highly paid. I was expensive.
Yeah.
Because it costs a lot of money to get there. But no, I was not. We were not highly. We were government employees.
Right.
We didn't get overtime. No, we didn't even get hazard pay, believe it or not.
You needed a good agent to do a performance-based contract for you.
But that would have caused so much trouble. We would, they would have said, no, okay.
Somebody else.
We'll go to this next guy. Yeah,
right,
so
less than 100,
that's
right.
That's not a solution for us. There's a lot of people that can do our job, and we were very grateful to have it.
Nice.
So as a result, the compensation was standard. We got paid well. But anyway, that's not the point, Dave.
Sorry.
It's fine. The point is that... we were up there.
We need
up
more
there
New York astronauts, by the way. I hope you're watching this. There have to be more.
Some might say we have too many. What I noticed was is that people, because I went to the telescope, people started asking me astronomy questions. Like my neighbors would come up to me and say, "Hey, Mike, you know, tonight in the sky, we're gonna look up and we're gonna see, you know, Mars is on the other side of Venus, and this is the only time it's happened in 300 years. And when I go, "Well, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm gonna watch the game tonight."
Yeah.
And I go, "Well, don't you notice? You went to Hubble." I go, "Yeah, but I don't look through the telescope. I just fix it."
Right.
So, when anyone would get these questions as a crew, I would, you know, "What is Hubble gonna do?" I would just say, "It's gonna unlock the secrets of the universe," and that's pretty much what
that's
it does.
Cool.
I mean, Hubble has done things that when they first launched it, it was able to answer some questions like the existence of black holes. They weren't sure if they actually existed. It was a theory, and Hubble was able to identify and prove that they exist.
That's awesome.
Things like planets and other solar systems, like you showed, but they really couldn't find them, but Hubble was able to find it. Yes, there are planets orbiting other suns. There are other solar systems. It was able to identify those, but it also came up with discoveries that they never even knew to ask the question about, like dark energy and dark matter where there's more matter in the universe than we can account for, and we don't know what it is, so we call it dark matter. There's an energy source in the universe. We can't account for what this energy source is that's making the universe expand at an accelerating rate. And so Hubble discovered that. So it's unlocked a lot of these secrets. It's brought the wonder of the universe and the beauty of the universe to us. So that's where this unlocking the secrets of the universe comes from. That's in the title.
With all the scientific knowledge that you have in the expansion and dark matter, mm-hmm. which really, really interests me, and I'm a spiritual person, how has it affected your spirituality and your understanding or belief in kind of the existence and mm-hmm. time as it's related to that existence?
I think
probably the deepest question I've ever asked on this show.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you're the only one qualified to
that
answer.
That should be a standard one.
Yeah.
I think that depending on your point of view, going into space might strengthen it, or in one way or the other. Or so I think that, you know, for example, sometimes I get asked, well, you know, you believe in all this science stuff. How could you believe in religion or spirituality? I don't think there's really, I don't think there's any difference. Mm-hmm. So for me, I consider myself a spiritual person. I was brought up with the Catholic guilt. How's that? Okay.
Yeah. So you guys invented it. We perfected it.
I think you guys invented
it. We invented it. You perfected it.
I think we're just kind of tagging along. But for me, when someone you interpret things from a spiritual point of view, you might say, "I can see this creation, and I can see, you know, if you're going to, from that point of view." But someone who doesn't believe in God or whatever
source,
religion
right,
is, or whatever the story is, can interpret it another way. So I think that I think your belief sort of more frames how you're going to interpret life and interpret everything you see. It's not going to say, "Oh, wow, okay, now that changes my point of view because I'm seeing this from this perspective." For me, it all kind of comes together. So I think it just more enriched what I consider myself as a spiritual person. But I don't necessarily think it would change your point of view.
And how did that relate back to two things that I think are determinative of people's illusionary existence on Earth? Is time changes when you go to space, and the ego. Right, there's two things, and I think they're directly related. How did your perspective of time and ego, if it did, change at all when you started actually, you went up to space twice and you mm-hmm. spent, you know, almost 30 days, I think, total. They keep track mm-hmm. of it, but, mm-hmm. you know, did your perspective of time change or ego?
Well, time meaning like how you're...
The perspective of time. So, in mm-hmm. my opinion, right, that as the universe expands, time changes, there's a relativity to time, mm-hmm. which as a scientist, I'm always... You know, so exciting to talk to someone that really understands the science of time.
Uh-oh.
So as you come back to Earth, do you have a different perception of time?
Well, I mean, and so I don't know if you're thinking about like as you get if you were to travel really far away from the planet, you would see a big difference in the amount of time that had elapsed. We were not that far away. You've got to get really far away.
But you're watching through a television.
To do that. So for us, we didn't age any differently.
Right.
Maybe a super duper small amount.
But mathematically, that makes it possible that time travel, maybe you might have a different perspective of time travel, for example.
Right, but I just say 5 years off my. You've got
you
to get really far. Now, again, check out what the. I don't know, edit this so I look better.
We will.
But you have to get really far away for that.
Yeah.
The difference in time with us was that you're kind of working in our flights, you're kind of working on a flight plan based on. You know, you're not looking out the window. The sun, you're going around the planet so quickly.
Yeah.
17,500 miles an hour, which is fast.
That's fast.
And it takes 90 minutes, more or less, to do one orbit. So you get 45 minutes of sun in 45 minutes, more or less. I mean, it's not quite exactly that, but about half that time in daylight, half that time in darkness. So 16 sunrises and 16 sunsets in a 24-hour period. So you're more dependent on I'm pointing my watch, but what your clock is telling you and how to plan your day. All right, it's time for this, it's time for that, and everything else. It's not, the day and night really doesn't mean as much. So, and from that perspective, what changed was, for me, was going around the planet so often, and during a spacewalk, getting to see this kind of play out on a big stage, more or less in front of you. You can see the sun in the distance, and you can see the Earth, the line. When you come into a sunrise or a sunset, as you're coming into it, you see the line that separates night and day, and the Earth rotating.
Wow!
So that's different for me. I feel like now we're all these space travelers on planet Earth, And planet Earth is moving amongst all the other elements in the universe, the moon and the other stars and planets and so on. And we're all together part of this cosmic dance. So that's, I think, the different part of it from that perspective, time-wise. So the other thing you mentioned was something else you had.
We had ego. Yeah. I think, you know, your significance in the universe changes.
Oh.
And your ego changes, I think.
Well, like thinking we're small?
Yeah, or whatever you think. I don't know.
See, I don't think, a lot of people would say, oh, we're so insignificant. But when you think of the vastness of the universe, it's pretty big out there. But I think the beauty of our planet is so compelling that I think we're actually pretty important. And there, as we said earlier, I do think there's life other places. But I don't think that there could be any place that's quite as beautiful as our planet. So I think we are very significant. I think we're extremely lucky to be able to live here on such a beautiful place. It is a paradise.
Yeah.
And when I looked at it, especially from my spacewalk, you realize when you're in a spacesuit that that's what's keeping you alive. And you don't have the atmosphere of our planet to keep you alive. It protects us. It protects us from the harshness of space, from micrometeorites, from solar radiation. It's amazing the way it all works. We're not too far away from the planet, the sun,
amazing.
So it's too cold. We're not too close, so it's too warm. We're in this perfect place. We have a magnetic field that protects us from cosmic radiation. Like Mars, for example, doesn't have that. So it gets zapped and there's nothing on that surface that's moving around as a result.
Last question.
So I think we're very lucky to be here.
Last question. Now, Neil Armstrong has a legacy for our generation as the first man to walk on the moon.
Yeah. It's
very significant. I think you're going to play a role in that significance because of the new generation. I have an 8-year-old. I have three daughters, teenagers, but the 8-year-old, you know, being the first astronaut to tweet.
Yeah, there
may
you
be
go.
More significant than walking on the moon someday.
Yeah, no, you're not going to convince me of that.
All right. Well, if I can't convince you of that, tell us what legacy you'd like to leave. I'd love this question for an astronaut.
Oh, that's an interesting
what
one.
What legacy would you like to leave?
I think what I'm most proud of what we were able to do was the missions I was on to the Hubble Space Telescope. The tweeting thing was fun.
Yeah,
right? That was
awesome.
Great.
Great marketing
cool.
tool. I can brand that.
It was on, you know, my kids got a kick. They finally paid attention to my space flight because I got
so
made
cool.
fun of on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
And my kids thought that was
cool. And you've
been
on TV.
I've been on TV.
Yeah.
That was cool. But I think, you know, looking back on what I was able to be a part of, the way, and we talked earlier about the way you never know how your career is going to go. I was rejected 3 times to become an astronaut. I got accepted on the 4th try. And I think that you never know where you're going to get assigned as an astronaut. But I think that I was very fortunate to be assigned to the Hubble missions and getting a chance to be a part of that team and to be part of such a great project that does unlock the secrets of the universe. And it was really, I think, a great opportunity for us as a team to do well. And we set a record as a team, my first flight, and then with a slightly different group of people, the second flight, the record was the most time spacewalking on a single mission, and we broke that record on my second flight. We still have that record, and it's on the shuttle flight, so no one's going to be able to go up and break it because we don't fly the shuttle anymore. So I think I'm most proud of that, of being able to be a part of that Hubble team that was so successful. And that was my highlight, probably the highlight of my professional career. I don't really think that anything's going to top that. Is that I've had a chance to be on TV. I've gotten a chance to be on your show. This is quite
that's
a highlight.
Awesome, right? Yeah.
You know, that's all good, the book and other things I get to do. But it's something special. You're given, I think in that case, you're given such a unique opportunity. I think maybe something similar might be, you know, some of the athletes. You know, you have a chance to go to the World Series. You have a chance to play in the NBA Finals. Or you have a chance.
Yeah,
to
you're like
play
the Jim.
The Super
you're
Bowl.
Jim Leyritz of astronauts, right? You have that one big hit wonder. It's that one day that you hit the big home run to win the World Series.
Jim Leyritz is a nice guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So thank you for that compliment. But yeah, I don't know what it would be, but I think that the opportunity to do that, to be a part of that team was
awesome.
Was probably the. Yeah, I don't know about the legacy with the Twitter. Who knows? I mean, all the astronauts do it now, but that was just a function.
All I know is when I got a blue check mark next to my name, it was the first time my kids were proud of me, and I didn't even
really?
Know what it meant.
I'm not sure what that means either.
I verified
good thing?
On Instagram.
Oh, okay.
Anyway,
validated.
When I think of you, Mike, I think of everything comes in the right way at the perfect time, and I share that alignment in my career. My business partner, Warren Moon, we always talk about if this didn't happen and this didn't, and we had these dreams that came full circle. in a very odd journey. So
yeah.
I just want to really thank you for being here.
Thanks very much for having me.
This has been the most unique playbook, and I'm going to have to watch this one like 3 times. And you and I are going to be close friends because I'm in New York a lot.
I hope so.
And I'm Spoodie. I'd like to take you to a game.
Oh, that'd Mets be great, game. Man.
Anything you need in sports, I'm
your
guy.
Thanks, Dave. You got this on tape.
It's on tape.
This I'm going to count on that now.
Dave Meltzer, the name butcher, here with Entrepreneur, The Playbook.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.